Alright, this is the Survivors, I think. Anybody new here tonight? No? You're new to this class? Bless your heart. Well, it's the last, this is actually the last of the classes, but that's okay. We'll... not that hard to figure out what we're doing, hopefully. Although the first thing we're going to do is meditation. So we'll all you experienced yogis and yoginis, there's a difference, I guess. What do you think the difference is? Hmm? Say it again? Yeah, I think so. Yogini is a girl, is a female, make, you know, great meditator, and a yogi is a male, supposedly. So let's sit up and do a little mindfulness. I want to say something too about, and a little bit about mindfulness. Who knows what mindfulness means?
I think I do.
All right. Got an answer. We got a volunteer on the first, okay.
Well, I read like Eckhart Tolle, so. But mindfulness, for me, from my understanding of it, is being present in the current situation with everything that's going on right here and now, and not being anywhere else, not being in the future, not being in the past, not being caught up in my thoughts, but being exactly right here and now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I don't know if that's your definition of it, but
that's one. There's a lot of them. Yeah. Now that you have the mic, you have to speak. Anybody else? This is a big, this is an important word. I mean, you know, we're using these, we're throwing these words around like somehow everybody knows what they mean. They're quite important. I know Gisela was using it yesterday, you know, and a little bit differently than sometimes I've heard it used. And if, depending on what tradition you're talking about too, right? And even within the tradition, the teachers within the tradition, like Joseph Goldstein is one of my heroes. He's one of the founders of the Insight Meditation Society, and he does. I read an article in Tricycle. I mean, it was like three or four different people, and everybody had a different definition of mindfulness. They had to, you know, it was very interesting. Sorry. So Joseph's, the one I remember him saying was non-distractedness. But then of course one of the other people in this debate said, well, you know, even robbers and murderers and, you know, rapists and, you know, evil people, you know, is that what we're talking about? Is it the same thing? They need mindfulness to do their dastardly deeds. And so, you know, then they sort of, you know, wiggled around about that, as I recollect. And sort of left with the notion that it's something positive. If you, you know, mindfulness, you know, leads to something positive. And the things that we need to be mindful of are really the Dharma. I mean, you know, now the Tibetan, there are different texts in Tibetan Buddhism that, but the one, the definition that stands out and is called the, I can't remember the Tibetan name of it, the minds and mental factors. And basically there are 51 mind and mental factors. And mindfulness, pardon?
Low rig,
yeah. So 51. One of them is mindfulness. And they define it as recollection, which sounds an awful lot like memory, doesn't it? So lots of different ways to, you know, it's important to understand the language that we're using. And like when we're meditating, we need mindfulness to recollect the object of meditation. For example, if it's the breath or visualized deity or a mantra or whatever. And then we need another quality of mind called alertness. In the teachings on how to develop concentration, they talk about alertness, this introspective aspect of mind that's alert, that notices when the mind is going off and then brings it back. If you're trying to develop concentration, focus on something, you have to have these aspects of mind working. And you don't think about it. You're just sitting there, you know, watching your breath, and you sort of have a little contract with yourself that I'm going to focus all my attention on my breath. And then, of course, the mind just does what it does, which is to be discursive, and it takes off. And with alertness, sometimes we can catch it right when it takes off. Sometimes it's gone for a minute, or sometimes, isn't it? We might sit down for a 20-minute meditation. You set your timer, and the whole time you've been daydreaming. I've done that. And you think, well, that really wasn't meditation. But if one time we caught ourselves, you know, being gone, we brought the mind back, you know, that's... then we've meditated. This is what the teachers say. So we need to, there's several things going on that, and these are like muscles. This is like muscles that can be developed. Nobody ever told me that concentration was really that important or that it needed to be developed. But it also, concentration in and of itself is not that big a deal. It's not a Buddhist practice per se. You know, Hinduism, oh my gosh. You know, they have amazing yogis that can focus their mind. This is the biggest practice in Hinduism, is concentration. And some, I've had some friends, these are not crazy people either. These are people that I really respect. They'll be walking along some village or some place, some holy spot, and there'll be a Hindu sadhu or yogi, and he'll have like, his whole face is covered with clay. There's no way any air could get in. And he can, and this person, it's usually a guy, can sit there for like an hour or more not breathing. You know, because when your concentration gets that refined and subtle, the breathing actually stops. You don't need the breathing. As you develop greater and greater concentration, you can't use your breath anymore as an object of focus because it gets so subtle. So anyway, concentration is only a tool from a Buddhist perspective. It has a healing effect on the mind. You know, I mean, our mind is always so discursive, so it does have that aspect of healing the mind. But really what we wanted to be able to do is to develop insights with a concentrated mind. For example, you know, we want to develop this thing called bodhicitta. We want to be able to have actualized bodhicitta in our mind. Well, to do that, we do these analytical meditations, and we think about certain things. For example, you know, when we get to the equanimity, you know, the first one we do, we you know, see the friend and the stranger and the enemy, and we think about them in different ways, right? We talked about how to think about these everything changes, and in past lifetimes, infinitely different relationships, and they're all labels, and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of problems with attachment, a lot of problems with aversion, a lot of problems with indifference. And we, you know, we just work it up until we have some sense of equanimity toward these three categories of beings. Well, now we've just been in this sort of contemplative meditation or contemplative practice where we're thinking, thinking, thinking. But with if we have great concentration, the power of that thought is much greater than if it's just a, if our mind is not focused. But what we then do, and this is emphasized, I think, more in the Tibetan tradition than anything else I've ever studied. When you get to the point where you go, yeah, I get it, that we need that. I get a taste of what equanimity is after doing this. Then there's some experience, you could call it a feeling, you could call it an insight, you could call it whatever you want, whatever label you want to put on it, but it's when you get it, then you hold the mind there with concentration as long as you can. And that really takes that, the concentration then has the power to, along with this insight, to really transform our mind. Without the concentration, it's hard, very difficult, you know, it's impossible probably, from a Buddhist perspective, to have any deep insight. So it has to be, so we do, we alternate, when we do analytical meditations, we alternate between placement and analysis, you know. Even when you, you know, I said this earlier, we talked about meditating, you know, it's not, we meditate on emptiness, but then we meditate compassion, different language here, because we think about being connected to beings in a really intimate way, and then we're aware of their suffering, and it's that combination that allows compassion to rise in the mind. And the mind is actually transformed into compassion in that moment. You're not thinking anymore. There's actually a kind of a feeling of that if it could speak, that feeling would say, may you be free of suffering and its causes. But that's the definition of it. But that's not compassion, is it? Those are just words. Compassion is something that we've all experienced. And it actually is something that's that experience that when we've done the analytical meditation and we've transformed our mind into compassion, once we taste that experience, then we hold on to it with this placement, call it concentration, if you will, with the placement meditation, hold it as long as we can. And then, of course, it will last, and so the mind gets, you know, goes off as it will, and then we can go back if we want to continue with that practice of developing, say, for example, equanimity. We go back and do the analysis again until we develop equanimity. And oh, compassion, you go back and do it until you transform the mind into compassion. And again, you hold that in your mind. Hold your mind on that as long as you can. And that's how we can become more compassionate people. Not just meditating on compassion, but transforming the mind into compassion and then reinforcing that experience with really good concentration practice. So concentration and I'm not an expert on Hinduism, so don't quote me on this, but I think it's the big deal in Hinduism. In Buddhism, it's mainly seen as a tool to help develop wisdom. And it cannot have the kind of profound wisdom that we need without a focused mind. So, and there are different ways to develop concentration. So, let's start out by doing a few minutes of mindfulness of the breath. I love this practice. It's just nice and neutral, although it's not interesting. So, yeah, that's one of the things. We have to, by the way, you know, we're all used to, if we can, you know, if an object is really interesting to us, it could be like an attractive person or something like that, it's real easy to concentrate, isn't it, on that person or that, whatever it is, you know, that's desirable or pleasurable. Oh, yeah, no problem there. But the breath is neutral. We have to really work on that one. Have to take an interest in it, see the value of it, the value of concentration. So let's sit up straight, feet on the floor, or back if you're sitting on a cushion, and just bring your awareness. First of all, bring your awareness to your body. Maybe take, start out with three exaggerated breaths, breathing in through your nose and just filling up your lungs, and then out through your mouth, and then through your nose, and out through the mouth, and once again in through the nose, and out through the mouth. And now find the breath wherever it's most easily recognizable to you. Could be, for many different people, different places. You know, the tip of the nose is a common place because, you know, as you breathe in, there's kind of cool air breathing in and warm air going out, and there's a sensation there that can keep your mind focused. So, but you can easily lose it when you go from inhalation to exhalation, unless you can keep the concentration going. But you can use that. Or the expansion of the chest, or another good one is the rising and falling of the abdomen. Whatever is best for you, just pick an object. And if you want to count the breaths, that's fine. Like, you know, in one, out two, in three, out four, like that, and so on. Or just use your attention, pay attention to your breath, using these aspects of mindfulness and alertness to not lose the object. And when you do, which you will, you come back to the breath again. Now relax the concentration on the breath and just notice. Just notice whatever you're experiencing. Whatever is dominating your awareness, it might be a sound, it might be a smell, it might be a sensation. Whatever is dominating your awareness, just notice it. Be present with whatever it is. Don't get swept away by it. Just be present. And particularly pay attention to how it's constantly changing. Whatever you're thinking, whatever sensations you have in your body, whatever feelings you might be having, whatever it is, just notice how nothing stays for more than a moment, and then it's already changed into something else. Just notice that. And bring your mind back. Just take when you get lost, just take a few mindful breaths to kind of anchor your mind back with your body. And then once again, just pay attention. Now, you can kind of keep your mind in this meditative state, and we're going to do this Chenrezig practice, form Chenrezig practice. I'm going to read it so you don't have to do anything except just follow along, and I'll tell you what to visualize. And the mantra that all you have to remember is O Mani Padme Hum, that one. Maybe I should write that. Robbie, could you write that on the board, please? This practice is actually one of the requirements for people that are doing, that are getting credit for this class. So I'm going to do it. I may abbreviate it a little bit. Let's see how it goes. But this is, I'll tell you how we're going to do this, give you a little heads up about it. So what you're going to do is visualize Chenrezig, form Chenrezig. I don't think we have one, an image of one here, do we? But it's here. You see, there's the thousand-armed Chenrezig there. It's the Buddha of compassion. And it's really difficult to explain this, even though I do usually end up teaching this class called Introduction to Tantra, because nobody else wants to teach it. And so when you start talking about Buddhist deities and meditational deities, you know, you go, it's like it's very difficult to talk about it because it's, but you can imagine that we're using our mind to develop our mind. Think of it that way. And you can, it was like we were talking about earlier about compassion. Very difficult to like, you know, it's intangible, isn't it? But we want to meditate. We want to transform our mind into compassion. So what we do is the form of that the Buddha took to help meditators develop compassion was Chenrezig, or the Sanskrit word is Avalokiteshvara, and it's this beautiful, looks like a 16-year-old being, perfect in every way. There'll be a brief description of what he's holding, but the main point is that you want to imagine that in your mind's eye is the embodiment of compassion, of all the compassion of all the Buddhas, and now we've given it a form so we can actually relate to it a little better and use this form to develop our mind. And so this is the compassion of all the Buddhas in the form of Chenrezig. And we're going to envision light and nectar of different colors entering the body, you know, helping us to develop compassion, because it's so important. And it's so crucial to the development of bodhicitta. It's so crucial to all of the Buddha Dharma. Compassion is like the, you know, one of the keys. So it's a big deal. All right, so I'm going to read through these little prayers that are designed to help us. Sounds, and it seems a little ritualized, which it is, but each one has a meaning, and maybe you'll get a chance to study them at some point. But it helps to set up the meditation, and I promise you, if you try to do this without doing the prayers and the rituals that lead up to it, it will be like eating saltine crackers. It will not be very tasty or effective. So, we're going to start out with refuge in bodhicitta. All right, remember when those of you who've had that class, refuge, you know, before you ever do that, you want to remember, like, why am I going for refuge? Why am I going for refuge? And there are two reasons. Three, actually. The ones that are most commonly talked about. One of them is called fear. Healthy dread. Healthy kind of serious concern about the future with the kind of minds that we have and what we have to confront, which in a word is sickness, old age, and death. Those are the biggies. But then in between, there's so many problems, and we don't have much control, if any, at all of our minds. So this is, we understand that the future, with the kind of mind we have, we understand the future is not going to go well. And we have a healthy concern or dread for that kind of future. We don't want that. And so we And so then we have confidence that the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha, the three jewels, had actually come up with the medicine to solve our problems. So we don't have to suffer. We don't have to, even though we're going through situations in life, this, you know, pain is going to happen, but suffering doesn't have to happen, even when we're going through pain. Believe it, you know. Think about that one. So that's what it takes. That plus compassion, what it takes to go for refuge. So I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. So there's a Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That's who we're going to refuge. And the second part has to do with bodhicitta, by the practice of giving and other perfections. So bodhicitta, somebody who's realized bodhicitta in their mind, is a bodhisattva. And a bodhisattva's main job, and our main job is, as someone who's trying to become a bodhisattva, is to practice these six perfections: generosity, ethics, perseverance or patience, enthusiasm, concentration, and wisdom. Those are the perfections. So by my practice of giving and the other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. By my practice of giving and the other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And then the four immeasurables. Immeasurable love. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. And just when you hear these words, actually try to get a feeling for that. Wouldn't it be great if everybody could have happiness and the causes of happiness? Wouldn't that be great? May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings not be separated from higher rebirth and the bliss of liberation. And may all sentient beings abide in a state of equanimity, free from attachment and hatred, free from holding some close and others distant. And then because the guru, the spiritual master, becomes much more important in Tantra, and the next one has to do with special refuge to my root guru or lama, teacher, somebody that's given you an empowerment into this practice would be the one you would use. The quintessence of all refuge objects, I go for refuge. Please bless my mind with your transforming powers. So this is a big deal in Tantra, is that you have a spiritual mentor, a master that you basically are entrusting your heart, your spiritual life to. It's a real important relationship and very, it has to be taken, that relationship's very important. And without it, the Dharma is just in books. It doesn't live unless they're living exemplars of the teachings. And usually it's these people that have dedicated their entire life to transforming their mind into the Dharma. And that would be, these are the people that give these initiations. So your root guru. Now, here's the visualization. On the crown of your head, seated upon a white lotus, so above your head is a white lotus, huge, as big as you can imagine, completely made of light, like a hologram. On top of that is a moon disk. And on the moon disk is your guru in the form of Chinrezig. So your root guru could be the Dalai Lama, could be anybody. Anybody that you see that way, could be Jesus. In the form of Chinrezig, he's white in color. Again, completely made of light. And you want to actually feel that there's an enlightened presence here. This is not just some fantasy. You want to actually feel that there's an enlightened presence here. Has one face and forms. His first two hands are joined together at his heart, holding a wish-fulfilling gem. So it's like this. Inside of his hands is this gem called a wish-fulfilling gem. And it's said that the real wish-fulfilling gem is all sentient beings, because they're the source of our enlightenment. It's independent upon them that we become enlightened. But it's also said to be this mythical gem that fulfills all your wishes. In his second right hand, he holds a crystal rosary, while his second left hand holds a white lotus. Okay? So he's got four hands, two at the heart holding the wish-fulfilling gem, and then the second right hand is a rosary, and the second left hand is this lotus. And the rosary symbolizes the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. Usually it's a crystal rosary, and then the white lotus signifies purity. He's seated in a cross-legged Vajra posture, clothed in fine silks, and is adorned with precious ornaments. The syllables Om, O-M, Ah, A-H, and Hum are at his three places and emit lights that invite Guru Chinrezig from this natural abode. So what we imagine is that here above our head, we got a lotus and a moon seat, and then Chinrezig sitting in Vajra posture, completely made of light, the embodiment of all the Buddhist compassion. First two hands holding, you know, wish-fulfilling gem, right hand holding a crystal rosary, left hand a lotus, and at the crown of Chinrezig, crown right here is Om, symbolizing, you know, pure body, and then Ah, pure speech at the throat, and at the heart, a Hum, pure mind. So body, speech, and mind. Those mantras usually symbolize body, speech, and mind at his three places, which would be crown, throat, and heart. And then light goes out from the heart of Chinrezig into the universe, and all the energy from the farthest reaches of this universe, this compassionate energy that we would call Chinrezig, it comes back to us and absorbs back into this home at the heart. So we're inviting all the Chinrezig energy from the whole universe to abide in our heart. And then Guru Chinrezig then dissolves all these Chinrezigs that are coming from the farthest parts of the universe are then dissolving in the Chinrezig that's above the crown of our head. So it really empowers Chinrezig now. It's not just a visualization. It's been given like a ton greater than, more energy than, you know, any sort of atomic bomb. Kind of amazing, powerful energy of compassion is above the crown of our head. And you want to try to think this way as you do the practice. Now, seven-month prayer. I prostrate with body, speech, and mind and faith. Each and every offering I make, including those really performed and those mentally transformed, I confess all negativities collected from beginning this life in samsara. So confession is really important, isn't it, for purification. I rejoice in the virtues of all ordinary and noble beings. Rejoicing is a great antidote for jealousy. Please, Buddhas, by living as our guide until samsara ends, reveal the teachings to all sentient beings. I dedicate my own virtues and those of all others to the great enlightenment. And then there's a mandala offering, which is imagining that we're offering the universe and everything that's in it that's wonderful to all the assembly of Buddhas that are around us. Kind of surrounding us like the moon and the stars. All these Buddhas would be like the stars. By the virtue of offering to you, assembly of Buddhas, visualize before me this mandala. You know, the mandala sometimes is a circular, you know, depiction. It looks like a round thing. But here we're really talking about the whole universe, you know, in a form of a mandala built on a base resplendent with power, flowers, saffron, water and incense, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, sun and moon. May all beings share in its good effects. So without trying to translate that in, I mean, just think of it as everything that in the whole universe that's wonderful, that we're willing to make this offering to the Buddha of compassion. You know, this is the least we can do for the Buddha of compassion to train us to be more compassionate. So we make this offering, and then this offering mantra, Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niryata Yami. Now, the next line is, to Arya Chinrezig, whose body is pure white. So Arya just means someone who's achieved nirvana, a holy being. We can think of it like that. An Arya being who's actually seen emptiness directly, whose body is pure white, unstained by defilements, whose head is adorned by the fully enlightened Buddha Amitabha. To you who gaze upon all sentient beings with the eyes of boundless compassion, I prostrate. So we're paying homage, now respect, to the Chinrezig that we have created with our mind, but now it's literally taken on it is the embodiment. Our visualization of Chinrezig is the embodiment of compassion, and we're paying homage to that. Now here's the visualization for the mantra recitation. A stream of five kinds of nectar, white, red, blue, yellow, and green, kind of like a rainbow, pours from the heart of Chinrezig. Above the crown of our head is Chinrezig that we've envisioned. And all of these red, white, blue, yellow, and green lights, they're nectar, actually, but it looks like light because it's in the nature of light, pours down from the heart of Chinrezig and enters the crown of her head. This nectar purifies all delusions and obscurations and their latencies, and we receive all the blessings. So as we do this, this is one of the tantric visualizations, not easy. It's very dynamic, but it takes concentration. We have to work even harder because here we want to maintain a perfectly still posture. We have a visualization to do, right? Chinrezig, lotus, again, just a repetition. We've got a white lotus, a moon seat, Chinrezig, two hands at the heart holding the wish-fulfilling gem, right hand a crystal rosary, left hand a lotus symbolizing purity, and he's the embodiment of all of the Buddha's compassion. And as we say this mantra, this light and nectar is coming from his heart right down through the crown of our head and completely purifying all of our delusions and obscurations and their latencies. And we also are blessed by this energy. So again, you want to actually feel that this is happening. Even though you know we're using our mind here to train our mind, you actually want to have some conviction that you're doing something. This is not just an empty gesture. We're actually doing something very powerful, using our mind to transform our mind. It's amazing. And so as we say this mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, we'll do this, maybe we'll do it 21 times together, and then I'll give you a chance to work with this for a few minutes on your own. And again, this is, you're going to have mindfulness to be able to recollect the deity. what you're doing and why you're doing it. And you're going to have, you know, pay attention if you get distracted. Okay? And again, you know, just creatively align that this, that something powerful is going to happen as a result of this practice. So I'll do it out loud. A lot of, most of you know this mantra, but it's Om Mani Padme Hum, but we kind of sing it. They're different tunes, but we won't make it too fancy. We'll just do Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Now when you do the mantra silently, you actually do it so that and you can go quite fast with it, but you want to say it under your breath so that the person sitting next to you doesn't hear you, but you hear you. So it's kind of like Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. And it's very important, as you say the mantra, to do the visualization. And so you need to be mindful of your body and speech and mind all at the same time, with the awareness that we're purifying all of these negativities and obscurations, and we're being blessed by this mantra, and all the compassion of the Buddhas is our minds being transformed into that. So it's powerful, and there's a lot to do. So just do the best you can. That's really good enough. Don't worry about being perfect. But just do it silently under your breath, but at a quicker pace. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Om Mani Padme Hum. Now you want to actually feel that your body, speech and mind have been purified, and that you've been blessed by this energy of compassion of all the Buddhas. Now this is the last little bit, that little request to Chinrezig. Praise to the beautiful four-armed Lord of the world, sublime embodiment emanating from the unity of all the victorious ones of the three times, possessor of all knowledge and holder of the lotus, your immaculate feet beautifully adorn my crown. May the karmic pollution of myself and others be washed away by the cool tear of your compassion, great loving protector, sole refuge of pitiful transmigrating beings who have no guide. You generated bodhicitta first and then reached the extreme limit. O merciful one, please behold with your compassionate eye the beings of the evil gone caught in realms difficult to escape, experiencing the individual results of evil actions as hell beings or pretas amongst animals, asuras, and so on. Behold with compassion the thoughtless ones who return empty-handed. Even their high rebirth was without meaning. Their human bodies were so rare and fragile, but their lives were consumed only in suffering. Amidst their endless actions, the Lord of Death arrived. Behold with compassion tough-skinned beings like me who maintain a religious manner but did not achieve the great meaning. Being overwhelmed by attachment, hatred, and the eight worldly concerns, without having subdued our minds by observing cause and result, with compassion, please lead those without refuge on the path. For when their vision of this life fades, the vision of their self-created karma arises as the enemy in the bardo, and they are taken on a precipitous route by Yama's messenger. Look upon us with compassion, O Lama Chinrezig, Mother attached by compassion to all sentient beings, who is the special soul refuge of the snowland. May I and others quickly attain your state of enlightenment. So we're beseeching Chinrezig to help us quickly attain the state of enlightenment. And then finally, this dedication verse. May I quickly become Arya Chinrezig and lead all sentient beings to his enlightened realm. May the precious Bodhi mind, that's Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. And may that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. Okay, so that's that. We'll do this maybe on the first session. The first one or two sessions, we'll do this practice on Saturday. Those of you who are coming to the retreat, we'll definitely do this at least one time. Any questions so far? Yes.
So when I'm reading it, should I be like reading it and then taking a break and closing my eyes and trying to visualize, or you know what I mean? Because it seemed like there was a lot of specific stuff that you're doing while you're doing meditation. So you're just kind of doing it with your eyes open, I guess?
Like, well, actually, you know, you can, the ideal is to memorize the sadhana. And then it's just a guided meditation. But, yeah, you can, in the beginning, you read it, and then you pause. If you've read it, read something, you think about what it means. And the visualization is the most important part of it. Just like in Tonglen, you know, the visualization, just breathing in, breathing out, thinking, you know, it has some effect, but it's really much more powerful if we can do, you know, a good visualization along with that practice. Yeah. So, you know, this is Tibetan Buddhism. You know, we're the Tibetan Buddhism is kind of like Vajrayana is our thing, but we don't talk about it much. But look at the art. I mean, it's amazing. We have some, you know, the most of these statues came from Nepal and India. You know, the artwork, very stylized way of painting. You know, a little different than the Museum of Modern Art. I went to the Museum of Modern Art in Paris one time, and they had a toilet hanging on the side, on the wall. I thought, this is such a great teaching on emptiness. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. There's a toilet up there, and they call it art. So yeah, it was kind of interesting. Also, there was a bunch of garbage that they had just from a junkyard, and you hit a button, and it would all rattle. And I thought, wow. It's pretty profound stuff, isn't it? I really did. I thought, man, this is a great Buddhist teaching because it really shows you that, you know, some people call it one person's junk is somebody else's art.
No, it's the opposite of Buddhist.
Pardon?
It's the opposite. I'm an artist. I know all about this junk.
Well, okay. You got your opinion. I have mine. Okay. But it's... there's different kinds of art. That's for sure. All right. So, any questions about bodhicitta? We're kind of at the end of the class, but we're going to practice Tonglen now. So, I'll do that practice some more. But any questions about anything up till now? It was too easy. I'm concerned. You don't have questions, but that's okay. What do you think it'd be like? Anybody? I'll tell you what. We'll take up. We don't have a lot of time left, but we can. Let's take a couple of minutes and imagine. Trying to think what to get. You know, what it would be like to have this attitude that everything, that, you know, 24/7, that, you know, you genuinely want to use every second of your life, what's left of it, to get enlightened so you can really help other people. Other beings, just not just people, all the beings in all the realms of existence. That's, you know, you just, it is what you, it's the purpose of your life, basically. Just think about that one for a minute or two. And then, I was going to have you talk to one another, but I don't think I'll do that. Just think about it for a moment. And then I'm going to read, I gave you a checklist of things to take home. And I'll go over this too, because this is really kind of, this is where bodhicitta meets the road. Remember, bodhicitta is this altruistic intention to become enlightened based on love and compassion. It's, you know, it is what makes, Mahayana Buddhism a powerful, powerful tool. It makes enlightenment possible. Without this attitude, impossible to become enlightened, to become a Buddha. And so how can, there's a lot of, you know, text explaining how to use like every moment of your life to develop bodhicitta. Lama Zopa Rinpoche, whose picture's up here, he's to the right of the Dalai Lama, I believe. he's coming in a couple of months, and he leads this retreat called Lamp to the Path Enlightenment. And for the last couple of retreats, a lot of the time what he's been talking about is bodhicitta and how to transform every action of your body and speech and mind into a dharma action, into like to further your realization of bodhicitta. So these are just some of the things that you can do. When you wake up in the morning, you might think, may all sentient beings achieve the holy body of the Buddha. So right away, you're thinking of others. Normally, we get up in the morning and it's about me. But right away, we're training ourselves, may all beings become a Buddha. Wouldn't that be great? And get up, when we're getting up or standing after sitting, may all sentient beings rise from the great ocean of samsaric suffering. So these are mindfulness practices, okay? Mindfulness practices. We bring to mind these, you know, if you can memorize them, great. We bring to mind these different ways of thinking so that when you stand up, you think, may others, you know, be lifted up from suffering. And when you're getting dressed, may all sentient beings clothe themselves with shyness and shame. Doesn't sound like anything we'd want to, But offer to yourself as the guru deity or the guru at the heart. So may all sentient beings clothe themselves in shyness and shame. I'm not sure how that helps, but I will say this, that, yeah, you know, in this teaching of mind and mental factors, they talk about shame and embarrassment are actually positive things. Wouldn't think about that, would you? Shame and embarrassment. It just keeps us from doing, you know, we don't want to be embarrassed. But Venerable Rabina said this once or twice. She said, most of the time we behave ourselves because we don't want to look bad. And we don't want other people to think badly of us. So, you know, having a sense of shame, we might restrain ourselves if we have a sense of shame, and embarrassment would be, well, I don't want to do that. I'd be embarrassed. Other people would think I was crazy. You might think, well, these are not positive mind states, but anything that helps us restrain ourselves from negativity is considered to be positive. So that's why they're mentioned. When tying your belt, may all sentient beings be bound by the three higher trainings, ethics, concentration, and wisdom. And then when you're sitting down, a little further down, I will lead all sentient beings to the heart of enlightenment. May this happen. When you're lying down in bed, I bring all sentient beings to the soul. Anyway, I don't want to go over this because it'll be too much, but you can read through it. You know, there's on the second page, I guess if you flip it over, you can see there's a yoga of eating. So ways that you can, you know, make offerings. Imagine that there's a little Buddha at your heart, and as you're eating, you make offerings to the Buddha, and you're developing these realizations. When you're walking, I bring all sentient beings to Buddha's Pure Land. In other words, sometimes you, like, when you're walking, you imagine that you're leading sentient beings from wherever they are in their lives, from suffering to enlightenment. When you're walking around the stupa, it's really powerful to think like that, that you're guiding all sentient beings to enlightenment. When you're going to bed at night, and I think Rupa Rinpoche really made an important, really emphasize this, and I like that we need to have some sort of nighttime practice, a bedtime practice. And the best thing we could do probably at this, at least at a beginner or advanced beginner level, is to practice Tonglen, what we been doing and talking about the last few weeks. So, again, you've got, these are some things to think about ways to help you bring bodhicitta mindfulness into your daily activities. All right, so we're gonna do a Tonglen practice. Pardon? Are you working a crossword puzzle?
No.
Oh.
I've listened to Ron.
Oh, okay. Ron, did you want to say something?
I was just commenting about the going to the toilet. It's a little bit odd to me.
Well, you got to. Hey, look, we're talking 24/7 here, not 24. You know, not 24/6 and a half. In other words, every second. Well, look, wouldn't it be great? Think about it. If we could use every second of our life to develop bodhicitta, that's the point. What's left? I mean, some of us, everybody thinks we have, because of the actuarial tables, we think we have a certain amount of time to live. We don't. You know, some people in here are younger, might die before us older folks. And something to think about. Life's precious. It's happening right now. Could be over any moment. So let's use the moment. Seize the moment. It's a precious life. Could be over any minute. I mean, this is one of the real, these are kind of meditations that we do. Precious life. Could be over any minute. Gotta turn my attention away from just the things of this life to something that's meaningful, like developing bodhicitta. So anyway, thank you. 24/7, not 24/6 and a half. Yeah, I mean...
mindfulness, I think.
Pardon?
It's an exercise in mindfulness.
It is. A lot of times, when you're doing these tantric visualizations, you visualize like light and nectar going in and out the lower orifices of the body, or all of this bad stuff coming out, really. Negativity in the form of poop and scorpions and snakes and all the evils, all the bad stuff, and it just completely disappears in the space beneath. When we did Vajrasattva, that was a big part of that practice, when you purify the negative karma of the body. And so you do that visualization. So, yeah.
Is that why you talked about the toilet earlier?
What's that?
Is that why you talked about the toilet earlier that you saw in Paris?
Well, there might be a connection, actually. It's all coming together. All right. I said it was. It worked for me.
It's funny, when I find myself doing just that, when I'm in the bathroom and I'm starting to say mantras and things, I just, this is wrong. This is, doesn't feel like this. This disrespect. This doesn't seem like the time or place. And yet, it's like the concept of doubt, I tend to look as if it's a weakness, a fault, because I was raised in a tradition that faith was just to be solid, and if you had doubt, you were flawed. Now it's doubt is supposed to be healthy. Doubt is the healthiest thing of all for the Dharma. You question, you examine, you don't stop.
Yeah, you check it out and find out for yourself. If it works, if it does, great. If it doesn't, you move on. You find something, but I suggest, this is my, things that don't work now, don't just trash them. Set them aside. Because maybe later on might be helpful. Like that. I think that's been my experience anyway over the years. So, alright, so let's do, I'm going to just kind of quickly get us up to, Tonglen. Go through those 7 steps. But, we were talking last week, Tonglen you can do any time during the day. And I think it's particularly helpful when your mind is disturbed and you think of all the beings in the world. Like if you're depressed, you're just feeling down and depressed that day. And you just can't see any light. And you go, wow, think of all the people. Just the people. Forget about animal, like a, you know, just the, you know, human beings that are depressed and think, you know, may, you know, I'm going to take, you know, their depression into my heart. This is, my depression is going to suffice for them. I'm going to take it all into me, right? And so you're thinking about others' depression. You're bringing it into your heart. Now, it's, again, some people say, well, I'm worried about getting more depressed. But really what's going to happen is we're just, by doing that, it's antithetical to the ego's instinct. So it's destroying self-centeredness, isn't it? The real source of problems. So we're taking in the depression of all beings, destroying our self-centeredness, and then we imagine that we're sending out like little Buddhas, little Chinrezigs, little enlightened beings from our heart, and they're going to these depressed people, and they're telling them they're okay, and you know, their depression is healed. And they get the Dharma teachings, and they practice the teachings, and they have qualified teachers, and they practice it, and then you visualize that they all transform into Buddhas, enlightened beings. You do that as the best you can, you know, with your mind's eye. Or if you're stressed or angry, I'm really angry today. Think about all the people that are angry. Again, as soon as you shift the focus out, it takes such a lot of the heaviness of whatever you're experiencing dissipates. Just try it. I mean, you know, maybe many of you have already tried it, but it's amazing. So you can use this like that. But let's do Tonglen. Well, let's just do it with ourselves tonight. Like, just good. Maybe ourselves and maybe one other person. So visualize yourself in front of you. In your mind's eye. And Rupa Rinpoche, he thinks, you know, he says, well, think about the suffering of tomorrow and next week and next year. But I think we can even think about things that have happened to us even in this life as children, as, you know, in the years preceding, leading up to the present moment as well. And think about that, the suffering and the sadness, whatever it is, from a loss or something that happened to us that, or something we did that's really leaving a kind of a heavy feeling. Something real for you, though. And then imagine that negativity, that heaviness that you recall as you visualize yourself in front, rises up in the form of black smoke, like black light, smoke like light, I guess, and try to see that it separates from your body. And now you just gradually breathe that negativity slowly. It doesn't have to come in one deep breath, but just gradually breathe it until it's right in front of your nose. And then take one more breath and breathe it right down to your heart. And it destroys the self-cherishing mind. Taking on that suffering destroys the self-cherishing mind. And your body completely fills with light. And now you breathe out, like, slowly. It doesn't have to be in one breath, but just you breathe out this white, kind of healing light. And you see that light merges with you that's visualized in front. And then you feel like that, you see that, you know, you've been healed. You know, you've been, this, whatever this was, is gone. And now, you know, we've, you know, you have happiness and the causes of happiness. Think that you have happiness and the causes of happiness. And that you have all the realizations of the Dharma from, you know, the determination to be free, bodhicitta, correct view of emptiness, all the different stages of Tantra, up to the highest yoga Tantra. You know, you've gained all of these profound realizations and you're transformed into an enlightened being. Completely happy. Completely blissed out. No fear, only love and compassion. And you know exactly what to do in every situation to help others. That's the power of wisdom combined with compassion. And not only do you know what to do, you're willing to do it. You're willing to actually take action. You're capable of taking action. And now, if you have a taste of this, hold your mind still. Place your mind single-pointedly on that experience. We'll do the dedication verses 246 in the prayer book if you have one handy. So what does dedication mean? Anybody have a quick and easy definition of dedication? We talk about it all the time. We do it. We always talk about, you know, whenever you're doing Dharma practice, and actually we should do it whenever we do anything that's virtuous. But,
Oh, your positive energy and merit that you've accumulated?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we're dedicating it. Yeah, that's true. In the beginning, though, the most important thing is to set the motivation. And the most powerful motivation we could have is bodhicitta. So, if we can quickly, we say the words, but we don't connect with the meaning, and that's a mistake. That's like missing the point. So when we spend a moment to really kind of get a feeling about, I'm doing this not for myself alone, but for all beings. I'm here, you know, to develop myself so that I can be, you know, an instrument of healing and help and make the world a better place, I guess. You know, save the world. Be great. So get that at the beginning and at the end of dedication. And it's kind of like, if we don't dedicate it, the merit, it will ripen. Positive karma always ripens. So we've done, I'm going to say we've created tons of positive karma. If we don't dedicate it, guess what it's going to end up creating? No. Just something pleasurable. A Mercedes. No, really, ordinary. Just a, you know, samsaric pleasure. Doesn't create the cause for enlightenment. So we want to dedicate, we want to take this positive energy and not just let it disperse. You know, eventually it'll ripen, but we want to send it down a particular path called the path of enlightenment. We want it to ripen as the cause of our future enlightenment. So that's why we dedicate like this. So this Shanti Dev is the ultimate dedicator. So we'll do that. May all beings everywhere, plagued by suffering of body and mind, attain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing and the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May male medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. All right, so thank you. Those of you who are not coming on Saturday. So let me see how many, who are the brave souls that are coming on Saturday? I want to see who you are. So can you stand up, please? No, I'm serious. I'm really, I'd like to get a physical expression. You're all going to stand up anyway. So those of you who are going to be here, because I just want to know who's going to be here. All right. So kudos for you. Pardon? Okay. Pardon? Yeah, bring lunch. Joanna's not going to be here, so I actually might need some help. Okay, thank you. Okay, so, you know, the center's going to open at 7. We'd like to get started at 7:30. We might end up getting out a little early. But
someone to open up.
There will be, okay.
No, you'll need to get...
Oh, I'll need to get somebody.
I can open.
Do you have a key?
I open every morning for meditation.
Oh, okay, great. So we'll start at 7:30. I'm against my better judgment. 7:30.
Really start.
Well, we'll be here at 7:30, and then we'll have a break at 7:45. I'm kidding. If anybody wants to bring donuts or whatever, that'd be fine too. Pardon?
I'll buy lunch.
You'll buy lunch. Oh my goodness! Thank you.
We get takeout. Come get it delivered.
Oh, that's a great idea. Thank you.
Yeah.
It'd be great to stay here, give it a little bit of a retreat feeling. Oh, she's a... Anyway, kudos for everybody who stuck it out for the last 6 weeks. I think it's... you know, the juiciest topic, for me anyway, the most wonderful thing in all of Buddhism is bodhicitta. And those of you who come Saturday, you know, you hopefully you'll get an even richer taste of it. And again, thanks for showing up. I usually say this sometimes, but I really mean it. Thank you for showing up so that I could train myself. Because I get a lot out of these classes for myself. Thank you.